You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
A WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday. It is 8 after 10 on WTCM, and yes, it's time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. It is so good to be in on Thursday, November 2, 2023. Fantastic day to be out and about. Everyone survived Halloween. Thank you very much. Our son was telling us, he said, Dad, we bought $200 worth of Halloween candy, and they ran out about 7:30. I mean, it's just, he said, the lines were, you know, just amazing, the number of kids showing up. So I guess he lives in the right neighborhood for Halloween candy anyway.
Free candy.
And you've heard already, joining us today is Deanne, our own Deanne Jennings, Director of Operations. Welcome, Deanne.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Such a pleasure to be here this morning with you.
It's great to have you with us.
And Heidi Cartwright is sitting out, so Deanne is in the co-captain's chair.
I know. It's
and
strange.
Dennis, and, but lots of information today.
You bet. Yeah, we got a ton of stuff here. We're talking about the economy today. A ton of conflicting opinions. We're going to try to help you navigate. And if you do have a question of a financial nature, if you would, Ron, our number is, please.
You can call us live, unless you're listening Saturday morning. At that point, it would be a rebroadcast. But Thursday, call 947-0023. That is the 231 area code, 947-0023. You can also shoot us a message, a text, at 833-728-1140. That's 833-728-1140.
A couple of announcements. Class on taxes is filled up in November here with Mr. John Sluice. If you do want to be on the waiting list, you can do that. We'll have more classes this coming year. In fact, we're looking at trying to do a Retirement Planning Today course, which would entail 2 evenings. We're looking at trying to get that arranged right now. But knowing your tax bracket with John Sluice is filled on November 15th, and that means we'll probably do another one. I'll announce it here because of the popularity of that.
Absolutely.
We've done, so far, we've done a Medicare course. I think that one was full as well. Mm-hmm. And Roth IRAs. Popularity, really pretty good between those. So it's a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Pleasure doing these courses and having the classroom right there.
So you might don't hesitate to call in because we do have a waiting list. You never know if someone cancels last minute.
You bet.
You might have some ticket scalpers at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. $50. $50.
Out in the parking lot.
Yeah, right.
There you go. Boy, it's been interesting, too, to hear. We were talking. Let's interrupt our program just for a moment with this public announcement, if you would, Ron.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about these books through Impact 100, and I think that is the coolest thing. You and I were talking about being, as we were growing up, being part of the weekly reader geek club, if you will.
Yeah, right.
That, I used to love ordering books in being in my elementary classroom. Now, we must have had to have parental approval on those things, because I remember I could never get enough of those things because it was always so fun. They'd have this giant box of books that would come in, and the teacher would hand them out. Here's yours, Dennis. You know, that sort of thing.
To see Dennis was in second grade. Here's Dennis's financial planning for the 70s.
Yeah. You know, my hair was not red then. It was orange, just for the record. But it was so exciting. Yeah. And you were talking the same thing, Ron.
But yeah, and I did the same thing. So at some point, we were taught to read and loved to read. And that teaches you to learn to learn. You love to learn.
Exactly. Yes.
But if you don't know how to read and you start school, you're behind. Mm-hmm. So reading's the equalizer. So this group, actually it was Traverse City Sunrise Rotary that got together with Munson Medical Center and Dolly Parton's Imagination Library and worked out a deal. Basically, every child born at Munson, free, if their parents enroll, get a free book every month for the first 5 years of their life. That's like 60 books. Doesn't cost the parents anything.
How cool.
It's all because the Traverse City Sunrise Rotary raises money, and you mentioned Impact 100.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They were a big donor to the Rotary program for this purpose because they recognize the ongoing value of it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So. Oh, my gosh. So how do...
If you want to donate, $150 is all it costs. That will take care of one child, 5 years, a book every month for 5 years for $150.
Wow.
I know. And nice. Impact, we were listening to the person, you know, present, and they just said how the kids learn that they're getting a book every month, and they get so excited. They're like, is my book here? Is my book here? Which encourages them to learn and to read and to be ready for kindergarten.
Even at the first few months, mom and dad will get these books and might be more likely to read
to
the kids.
To them.
I know I personally, just from having our own grandkids, it's a different kind of attitude or environment that happens when the child is sitting with you and you're reading them the book. It just is, it's engaging. Mm-hmm. Somehow it's a different kind of part of the relationship, if you will. Mm-hmm. And for us, I think it's always been positive. So, man, where would they contact, or how do folks find out about this, Ron? You're looking it up, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to find, this is a specific program in Grand Traverse County. Well, actually, it's five counties around Grand Traverse. And I'm going to say Google up Books from Birth.
Books from Birth.
Yep, and it's run through primarily through the Traverse City Rotary Club, the Sunrise Rotary Club.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sunrise Rotary Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it. For
Dennis,
those who might
I bet
be
you're fun
books.
When you read to your grandchildren. Do you do all the voices?
Yeah.
I can hear it, yeah.
You know, I think the funnest one has been maybe the kids, but the adults too. All Creatures Great and Small, because you've got all the British voices. And that makes it a lot of fun.
And one of their favorite books is Goodnight, Ed Slott.
I love it, Ron.
By the way, that's why Nathan and or Heidi are not here. The class with Ed starts at 11, and they're signing in for me because I'll be about 10 minutes late, but our big web course is starting up here. So we'll be armed to the teeth with new tax information this coming week, which we'll be talking about for our information from Ed Slott.
All right.
So thanks so much for joining us. We're talking about the economy. And what's interesting about this is the lack of agreement. The lack of agreement from those who are tend to be in the know. Ray Dalio, Jamie Dimon, Larry Fink, some of the biggest names in the industry. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, BlackRock CEO Larry Fink, Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon, Blackstone CEO Steve Schwarzman, and Bridgewater Associates founder Ray Dalio all shared their views in Saudi Arabia, apparently last week. What was interesting is if you would have put them all in one room together, they probably would have gotten in a fight. They were tended to be in agreement, but they really weren't. It's interesting the diversity of opinion from them. Dalio said he was pessimistic about the global environment. Historic amounts of government debt in the U.S. and other countries and the Russia, Ukraine, and Israel-Hamas conflicts were concerns that Dalio had. Well, now, he runs the biggest hedge fund on the planet. 200 and some billion dollars, a relatively large sum by most measures, and a very smart guy. He has his concerns. Jamie Dimon bemoaned the massive amounts of fiscal spending in recent years and how that's increased government debt. I'm cautious, he said. I don't know what's going to happen. Well, join the club. Join the club. David Solomon, Goldman Sachs chief, recalled the boom in mergers and acquisitions coming out of the pandemic as massive amounts of fiscal stimulus and rock-bottom interest rates fueled extreme confidence. They were all cautious, to be sure. Fink ruled out an economic downturn or full-blown recession next year as he believes government spending programs will shore up output. Larry Fink, another one that we mentioned here in the intro. So each of them believe something, again, a bit different. Steve Schwarzman, Blackstone boss, says he's navigated six economic cycles in his career, giving him a good sense of what's happening now. I find that entertaining in and of itself. And he said he wasn't overly pessimistic. But what's interesting, I think, is what our own economist, we'll just call him Rob because that's his name. Look at the chart below, he says, from Lizanne Saunders. Contrary to the negative signs of the temporary help services payroll index, now they're looking at several indicators here to try to help us all determine where are we. The recession alert index says the no recession viewpoint is still valid. Both are great indicators. He says, take your pick. So very difficult to glean what's going on. And the question then becomes, why? Why, you say, are they having so much trouble determining what's going on?
So some are pessimistic, think there could be a downturn or recession. Others, not so much. Some think government spending and debt is a huge problem. Others say all that government spending is going to shore up output.
Yes.
I could be an economist.
You could.
Ron. Exactly.
So I think, I'm not sure what's going to happen. That's my statement.
Yeah, there you go.
But wow.
A chart of the Recession Alert Weekly leading economic index is shown below, and it currently not forecasting a business cycle recession. It says here, as a further point to this, it's no wonder yields are rising. So the 10-year treasury yield is near 5%. It was near zero a year and a half ago.
Wow. Hmm.
What's interesting is that is a 236-year precedent since our founding. We've never seen that quick a rise in interest rates and that much of a fall in value of debt or of bonds that are represented by the treasury debt. 236 years you can go back, and it is the biggest loss, one-year loss. Well, actually, the date of the market peak, that means where interest rates were at their lowest, was 7/31 of 20. The date of the market trough, or where it's at its lowest, and interest rates currently are at their peak, guess what? 10/31 of 22. So we can just say it's a little over 2 years in this particular case. The peak to trough performance down 24.7%. What does that mean to me? It just means that shows how much interest rates have gone up. Values are indirect to interest rates, or directly opposite of values are directly opposite of interest rates. So that just shows, back 234 years, the Bank of America's historical data goes back 236 years, all the way to the founding of the Republic. This is a jarring statistic. It is a $70 trillion mark to market. It means $70 trillion has been lost for those who are holding those types of bonds. What this is interesting to look at, it's no wonder yields are rising when the U.S. government is the only borrower. The U.S. government is the one that's at fault, as you just said, Ron. And I am in 100% agreement. I don't know sure I want to blame them or not. You know, who's going to come after me, right? So the U.S. government is the only sector to have notably borrowed on a net basis over the last 5 years. The market sees this as inflationary, driving yields higher. So, Ron, Mm-hmm. You see this graph here?
See, it's a bar graph, yes.
A bar graph. You see the extensive increase there in government debt?
It's huge.
And household debt is actually lower.
Yeah.
You can see that line.
It's gone down.
Household debt has gone down.
Mm-hmm. What time period is that? Because I thought household...
This 5-year change in debt.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
5 years.
Okay.
So for the last 5 years. Non-financial corporate, up barely a tick.
Barely?
Barely.
What's the one that's way up?
You guessed it. The government. Thank you
government.
Very much.
Wow.
So sometimes a picture's worth
government
a thousand
debts.
Of Dennis's
yeah.
words. Dennis, why didn't you start with that, right? So in contrast, the household sector's leverage is now lower than it was pre-pandemic. So pre-pandemic, what was that? March of 20, somewhere in there?
Yeah.
While the corporate sector is only marginally higher, the U.S. government has become the borrower of first as well as last resort. The market is picking up on this and is pricing accordingly. And what did Paul Volcker say about this? Hmm. You're all asking.
Yes.
Dennis, what did Paul Volcker? Because he was the lion, if you will, of the Fed back in the early 80s. He was serving while Ronald Reagan was president. And he said, I am going to conquer inflation. So what happened to interest rates? They went to the stratosphere. Talk about pain and suffering. Well, for those who were savers, it was the glory days. Yeah. They went up to 16, 17, 18%. Well, what did that do? It constricted the economy. He was trying to drive interest rates lower. And what did he say to the federal government? What did he say, in essence, to Congress? Just because everyone's on the edge of your seat. Okay, sit back a bit. Mm-hmm. Don't go too edgy. What's happening is, what he said was, the federal government needs to cut its expensive ways. They're going to have to cut spending.
Hmm.
No comment
is
in the
possible?
Room.
No.
Could that be possible even?
I don't know.
That's why I think we're actually beginning to see some waves being made by the new leader of the House. What's his name again?
Mike Johnson.
Mike Johnson.
Common name, so therefore it's hard to remember
exactly.
for me.
Thank you.
Is
yeah.
it Ron Smith or yeah. Bill Jenkins? Yes. It's Mike Johnson.
Well, just call him President Johnson. That'll make it easier.
yeah.
So President Mike Johnson, mm-hmm. yeah, he's threatening to cut expenses in the federal government by trading out some of the budget for the IRS, in essence, to help fund the Israel-Hamas conflict. Now, isn't that interesting as well?
Yeah.
And he's being called all sorts of names, you know. But what it, to me, precurses is, I think perhaps, I'll just say perhaps, Dennis qualifies it, Jeremy Siegel, our current chairman of the Fed, may have to eventually address government's profligate spending and say, listen, you're going to have to cut spending if you want us to be able to get this thing under control. Mm. Because unfortunately, what even some of the most conservative houses are saying of management, we'll call that, can I use a fund name, American Funds?
Hmm.
Capital Bank is saying, Capital Bank and Trust, as I refer to them, they're saying, paper U.S. government debt. We need to talk. One question I've heard at virtually every client meeting over the many years is, are you concerned that U.S. government debt is too high? My somewhat glib, though honest answer has always been, it'll become a problem when it becomes a problem.
Mm.
That is, when foreign and domestic investors decide they no longer want to own U.S. Treasury securities. He says the U.S. has been far from reaching any threshold where the debt began to grow all by itself until now. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, estimates that next year U.S. government debt held by the public will exceed 100% of our gross domestic product and move rapidly higher in the ensuing decades. I don't know that I'd even say decades. I'd say it'd be decade.
Wow.
Worth noting is that the CBO forecast assumes that all legislation will be enacted as it is currently written, meaning that federal tax cuts passed in 2017 would expire. If that doesn't happen, the numbers could go even higher. So all of a sudden, the most conservative managers, money managers, I think the American funds are some of the most conservative, they're never alarmist, are calling out the mm-hmm. Fed and thus our own Congress to say, you're going to have to cut you're spending in order for this thing to move forward, or is going to get in the way of any growth. And they compare this to Japan. We all wonder, why was Japan so slow to recover? And so this article that I'm quoting from is from Simon White of Bloomberg Markets. We were talking about yields rising when the U.S. government is the only borrower. We wanted to continue on the track for what happened to Japan. I think we always wondered, I did, why were they in such a malaise for so long? Well, he explains it as this. Starting when the sovereign is the only borrower, that's the United States government, it crowds out the rest of the economy. With government's reputation for inefficiency, this depresses real growth. Government's reputation for inefficiency. Anybody say oxymoron? So the last oxymoronic phrase, whatever, the lost decades in Japan were primarily a result of the government stepping in to borrow as the private sector nursed its wounds from the late 80s financial crash. But that perpetuated and entrenched the situation. So when the Japanese government stepped in to borrow, it made it worse. With the Treasury now the sole borrower of any significance, the U.S. risks going down a similar yet more stagflationary path, hindering real growth and keeping yields elevated, because they're competing for the funds. What's interesting is they're saying corporations are funding their own debt by sponsoring bonds. They're not going out to the private sector to borrow. They are, in essence, by sponsoring bonds. They're not going to banks and or other institutions to borrow because those rates are too high. They're not willing to pay that spread. So that, they're financing their growth in other ways. And isn't that interesting? Just when the Fed thought that they had gotten the corner on that, it's proving very difficult for them to control this inflation that they themselves have induced by their extensive spending.
Dennis, do you feel that the economists are kind of sounding the alarm because it may get to a point very soon where it's hard to turn the ship around, so to speak?
Yes, I think they are. And, you're hearing a chorus of voices becoming more and more concerned. And I think eventually Congress has to hear that. Because
just during
the
break,
internet memes.
As you brought up the new speaker, Mike Johnson, in the last segment, during the break, he was live speaking at a press conference saying exactly what you had brought up. He said, we have to get federal debt under control and be more responsible with our spending. Imagine that.
I can't even believe it. I guess it's good to be in that company. I think what he is saying makes sense. And I think it'll make sense to the market. Eventually, I think it'll make sense to Congress as well. They'll have to follow.
That statement he made, that'll be on the news all day today. It'll be talked about on the news shows this Thursday evening. Do you think that'll impact the market now when the investors hear what this new guy said?
Well, it certainly would be viewed as being positive. Turning that ship is going to take some time.
I think the Dow just went up over 50 points in the last 10 or 15 minutes.
Isn't that interesting? It's up almost 350 points, as you show it right there.
Wow.
Whether or not it's a result of that, I'm not sure. But what's interesting was that Bank of America was saying, and I think we were talking about this before the show itself, or maybe at the break, Dennis's short-term memory. Anyway, Bank of America was saying that the market was being overly negative, very bearish, and that they saw that as an opportunity that the market would be coming up this week, and boy, were they right. So just when you thought it couldn't get worse, some would say it did, but it actually got better. And isn't that interesting? Who is predicting that they were one of the few that were predicting the market was actually going to come up? That shows, then, the importance of having some exposure if your risk tolerance is in that range and you are able to ride the ups and downs of the markets. That's why, and Deanne's got an interesting stat on this, any good financial advisor will tend to encourage you to have some assets in those areas that are longer term, that have growth and income potential. Because the issue, of course, becomes, well, we know what the problem is now. How do we prepare for that? Of course. But what about the next 5 to 10 years? How do those look? And how do I look further, perhaps, than what I might normally want to look? Or perhaps even comfortable looking. Of course, if you need to make adjustments to satisfy your own risk tolerance, that needs to be a part of it. But if you can keep some exposure there, neither you nor I can make those guesses that are that educated to allow us to make those short-term decisions to profit. So if you can have some exposure, all of a sudden things turn around and the market is up about 3, almost 4% in the last 4 days. It's huge. That's not a bad return for Monday through Thursday. Yeah. It's a bit ridiculous, actually.
Let me switch that for you there. But you want 5 days? Yeah, 5 days.
It hit its low. If you can just hover over that there, Ron.
That was
32.7. It's at 33.6, up about 1,000 points. So we'll just call that almost 3%, okay, just so Dennis can be accurate. But, again, who would have guessed that? And it just points up the fact that good people, the reason that you hire any money manager is that you're hoping good people will continue to do good things over time. And what are these people in there doing? Just to back up a bit in talking about these money managers, they're in there looking for value. They're in there trying to buy companies that they see that have a great 5 to 10 year potential. Speaking of referring to Rob again, what he was talking about, the major companies he owns in his portfolio, and I'm not going to mention them here, you all will know them immediately, profiting from the AI revolution and how they have profited significantly in the last 5 to 7 years, and most likely, there are no guarantees, but most likely will profit in the next 5 to 10 years as well.
So when there's innovation, that spikes the economy and the market. Mm-hmm. When the smartphone came along, what, 20 years ago, or maybe less than that?
Talk about a revolution.
And now AI is just beginning, new technology there.
Yes.
Will have a huge impact. That's going to impact our economy in a positive way.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So innovation always does and will continue to drive. In essence, what they're almost begging the U.S. government to do is get out of the way. Please.
Yeah.
You are really blocking potential future growth in our economy to be able to drive interest rates down. So John and Susie, we'll just use their names, can actually afford a mortgage again. So let's go directly into the stats from here, if you would, Deanne.
Actually, I was going to bring up a stat that I found, which made me curious talking about AI. In this month's non-manufacturing business outlook from the Philadelphia Fed, respondents were asked about their plans for capital expenditures in 2024 versus 2023. On a net basis, 8.9% of companies plan to cut spending, and the only sector where spending is expected to increase is software at 17.8%, and that source is Philadelphia Federal Reserve.
Wow.
So software, and that immediately triggered, I bet that's AI.
Yeah.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And isn't it interesting that when companies know that things aren't working, as in the GM Honda, which many of you may have seen, partnership, they were going to really go after the EV market and invest billions. What'd they do? They cut it. They said that we don't think it's going to have the demand. So they cut that whole program and save themselves billions of dollars, I'm sure, in the process because they didn't see the demand meeting the supply that they were trying to generate.
Interesting.
But another part of that, too, is, Deanne, that stat that you had, what was it?
We now have a musical interlude. A musical interlude while Dennis scans the page.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Yeah, right there.
There it is right there.
There
we go.
As interest rates have surged, yeah.
Yes, as interest rates have surged, the pool of households that can qualify for a mortgage has been more than cut in half.
Mm.
When the 30-year mortgage rate was at 3% 2 years ago, can you believe that? 3%? Mm. That sounds so low.
Yeah.
50 million households in the U.S. could qualify for a $400,000 mortgage, With the same rate now at 8%, just 22 million U.S. households would qualify, and that source is John Burns Research.
How many would
from
qualify?
50 million to 22, is that what it said?
Exactly, yeah. 50 million to 22 households.
22 million households.
Mm-hmm.
So is if the federal government really wants to level the playing field, they ought to cut interest rates by controlling their own debt and allowing interest rates to wend down, if you will, due to that increasing demand, decreasing demand rather, for the debt itself that they're trying to sponsor, because they failed three different times in the last three administrations to actually sponsor or make their debt longer term, so they didn't have this problem of the rising interest rates in financing their own deficits. If they would have gone long term debt in the last three administrations, their interest rates would have been capped probably at 2 to 2.5%, and now they're at 5 to 5.5, or so, depending on the day of the week. Treasury bills right now are at 5.5%. 6-month T-bills.
Are many people, in your observations, putting more money into T-bills, pulling out of the market and going into T-bills with that guaranteed roughly 5% interest?
Some are certainly enticed by that. Some are pulling money out of checking and savings to get that rate. We're seeing a fair amount of that. And those that feel like they need to cut their risk are indeed pulling some. We're doing our best to, frankly, help people remember, if they can, that some of their money should be invested for the longer term. That's the process we're trying to keep them involved with as much as possible, so that they can profit from weeks like this, if you will, where the market turns around because it's been too negative and the price is too low for those stocks.
And Dennis, weren't you and Heidi, I was listening, and you and Heidi were talking about Janet Yellen and something she should have, could have done to make the...
Well, that's, transferring that short-term debt to long-term would have been a huge gain for our economy. Just think about it. About $33 trillion at 2.5% versus 5.5%. I mean, I don't even know what the interest cost is. I'd actually have to look that number up.
So you're saying we'll that long-term debt should be considered, or the debt should be considered short-term or long-term?
Well, right now, when interest rates are low, if they would have... sponsored or sold government debt at longer term, they could have locked in those rates.
Right.
Much like every personal mortgage holder on the planet did.
Right.
You know, what did you go out and do? Or most of us, we went out and refinanced our 30-year mortgages. Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. government could have done the same thing and financed at a much lower cost. But for whatever reason, they were asleep at the switch. Mm-hmm. Speaking of government inefficiency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it just points up again the fact that, what did George Washington say? Mm. Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force, like fire, a troublesome servant and a fearful master. Never for a moment should it be left to irresponsible action.
Why? Isn't it interesting, though, that to criticize the government spending, but if a politician came out and said, elect me, I'm going to cut this program and cut that program and reduce spending here, he or she probably couldn't get elected, because what the people are used to is want. We don't, generally the people don't want government to stop spending money.
That's right.
It's kind of a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if they were willing to even cut expenses to a certain degree, even across the board,
mm-hmm.
and figure out how to make those adjustments, I think it could be sold if it were done properly. Good luck in the meantime in terms of helping everyone understand what that means. I think a good part of the population just doesn't get it in terms of what that's going to do. See, Congress will eventually be forced into cutting their spending. Most likely when they least want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there ever a time when they least they don't want to least? Who knows? But what I am saying is, if they could be more responsible, as many in the government are saying themselves, even in the Social Security Administration, gosh, if you can just make some adjustments, all of a sudden the whole Social Security apparatus gains, people gain confidence in that. if they furthered their full retirement age, let's say to 70 for those who are 40 and under, or whatever that number was. You see where I'm going. So it's amazing the cross-section of advisors, money managers, and other well-known business people who are calling out the federal government for their excessive spending. And I think it's eventually, and it's in writing now, it's eventually going to have its impact. And it'll make for a very interesting 24. Now, what's interesting, too, along with that, is that the stat related to who's going to be our next president for right now is this. Without a doubt, the 2024 presidential election will be of extreme importance in determining the future of America. Rob here says, I follow the Stossel prediction site daily to see what the current betting odds of the outcome of the 2024 presidential election are. Here is the betting data as of 10/22/23, so about a week, 10 days or so ago. By candidate, I thought this was really interesting. By candidate, Trump is at 34.7%. Biden,
33.2.
Wow. Jeez. Hmm. So about a percent and a half difference.
Neck and neck.
It is. Newsom is at 7%. Haley, 4.3. Obama, 3.9.
Michelle?
I think it must be Michelle.
Yeah. What about Kennedy?
Kennedy, 3.9.
Wow.
DeSantis, 3.7.
Hmm.
Harris, 2.1.
So this is not a poll. This is people that bet on this kind of thing.
They bet on this thing and this sort of thing. The probability of winning the 2024 presidential election. And this betting site has actually been relatively accurate.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
Obviously, it could change three times
by
the time we get to November of 24. But it's interesting to see where it's at right now. It is tight.
Dave,
so, Deanne, you've got some stats for us, please.
I do have a couple stats. From its closing high on July 31st, 2023, through the close on October 25th, the small-cap Russell 2000 declined 17.6%, leaving it near its lowest level since late 2020. The Russell is now down 32.4% from its all-time high on November 8, 2021, and that source is Bespoke.
Why, that's small cap, so what does that mean, Dennis?
Small companies, small cap companies. I think they have market capitalizations of less than $1 billion. So they call themselves small. The market calls them small. But relatively smaller companies, if you will, tend to have more risk, more return potential as well. But given that more risk, it shows what's happening in the economy itself and why... We have concerns out there. We'll just call it that.
Exactly. According to a recent poll of 6,000 affluent investors by Cerulli Associates conducted in the first half of 2023, the percentage of investors willing to pay for financial advice surged from 36% in 2009 to 64% this year. And that source is RIA Intel.
I think that points up to the demand that we're seeing. We're we're very busy, but it people, and I get it, want advice. They want somebody to consult with, somebody to sit with them and help them walk through the complexities. In fact, you're going to be talking too, if we have time to get to it, about being a snowbird.
Yeah.
So even that, the thinking that needs to go behind, okay, what do I want to do to plan this sort of thing? Mm-hmm. So yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the post-World War II period, the S&P 500's performance in November has averaged the third best of any month, with an average gain of 1.5% and positive returns 67% of the time. The S&P 500's average performance in the last 2 months of the year also rank as the two best month period in the average gain of 3.02% and positive returns 76% of the time. And that source is Bespoke.
Yeah.
So maybe November will be
better. It'll be all right.
Good.
You bet. Well, we'll take the stats as related to that.
Absolutely.
What's interesting, in the last 2 years, the market's down about 6 to 7% over a two-year period, the stock market. So
over what period of time it's down how much?
Well, in November of 21, the stock market was hit November 1st of 21. We can just call that 2 years, can we not?
Mm-hmm.
Was it closed at 36.3. Well, it's at 33.6 right now. So it's down almost 3,000 points from that level.
Wow.
And that shows why the assets, invested assets, are lower. And it also shows the concern that's going on, again, pointing up the government spending that's going on and its demands on the economy. Mm-hmm. Most of the growth that's been experienced has been somewhat more conservative, but still coming along quite well, given regular companies out there that are operating. Even though they have supposed increased expenses, they've not gotten that much out of control for them in terms of operating. Now, that doesn't mean that costs for goods and services like food, housing, clothing, that sort of thing haven't gone up. But to operate in a business, their particular costs have not risen that much. That's why earnings are still doing okay. Mm. So, yeah, that higher interest rate eventually can and will have an impact. That's why we're saying, beware. Invest conservatively enough. But when that turns around, what's interesting, too, on the other side of it, some would say if we have some real concerns in the economy or some real issues worldwide, that interest rates could decline dramatically in a relatively short period of time. Mm. And I've heard a certain number say that as well. I didn't really want to talk about it, but if we go to a global war, okay, which everybody is kind of concerned about, I think, given Israel, Hamas, and all the rest, interest rates will probably decline quite dramatically, because that would mean that our economy had most likely gone into a recession. So given the reality of that possibility, that would mean interest rates coming down and would tend to be good for the economy, believe it or not, over a period of time. So while it might take a while to recover, hopefully not too long, who knows? I mean, we're all tied really quite closely to our own economy. And it is a partnership, if you will, where the federal government has to allow the economy to continue to grow so that they can pay for their profligate spending. Mm-hmm. Well, so that they're getting the tax receipts necessary to continue. So that's where it's a partnership. And when they get in the way, as happened in Japan, which we mentioned, mm-hmm. Then it tends to make the recovery much slower when the government gets in the way of that performance.
This is just so complex, and there's so many moving pieces. This is exactly the reason why we really want to encourage you, if you're listening, to find a professional financial advisor, because, again, economists are kind of baffled, and it's ever moving and changing, and this is your retirement. Like, you want to do the best that you possibly can with it.
Absolutely. And we certainly enjoy helping out there and educating. That's why we're doing this program. We love doing it. Obviously, it helps us over time as well. Mm-hmm. But we love disseminating this information. Frankly, said before, it helps hold my feet to the fire on the research. I mean, I really, honestly struggled to determine what to talk about because I had so much information to specific about it. So thank you for listening. We love doing it and love your participation in it.
So a couple of notes before we break up the party.
Sure.
The Lunch and Learn is once a month. The next one is sold out.
It is. Yes. It's November 15th with John Sluice, Know Your Tax Bracket.
Okay. You can call and get on the list if you want.
Get on the waiting list. If you're really interested, get on the waiting list. You never know.
So. Next month, is that scheduled yet? Can people reserve for the following month?
We're not having one in December. I think we're taking a break, but we'll start up in January and we'll announce that.
We'll be announcing that here in the next few weeks.
Absolutely.
You bet.
You're busy, you said. If people do want to have a sit-down or meeting with Dennis Proud or Heidi or somebody and they call, how does that work?
Absolutely.
Is there a waiting time? Or
get on the schedule. There is a 2 to 3 week delay in that or wait. If you do need to get in to see us more quickly, just tell Melissa there at the front desk, and we can often fit you in if need be. 231-947-3992.
And that first meeting is complimentary.
Yes, it is indeed.
Dennis Prout and Deanne Jennings, Prout Financial Design, New Retirement Radio here on WTCM Traverse City. Thank you all.
Thank you,
Thanks, Ron.
Ron.
Appreciate it.